Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hello, everyone. As I recently wrapped up my series on my preconception and fertility journey, I wanted to have an episode to go a little bit more in depth into PCOS, which is polycystic ovary syndrome. I really recommend that you go and listen to my previous episodes about my preconception and my fertility journey. This episode is going to focus more on my personal experience with being diagnosed with PCOS. And then I want to go into, you know, what PCOS is, how it's diagnosed, how it's treated. And I want to preface this by saying that my story is in a way unique. I think a lot of people who have PCOS or are going through evaluation for PCOS, they may find parts of my story are very relatable, especially since it took many years for me to finally be diagnosed with PCOS. It took over a decade, and that was someone who was, during that time, going through pre-med curriculum and the first few years of medical school and still not knowing what is happening to me, and someone that has pretty good healthcare literacy. I can only imagine how much more challenging it is for someone who is not in the healthcare field, or someone who doesn't have as much access to receiving healthcare as I had, as someone who had the resources in place to pay for appointments and to live in an area where there were providers available for appointments and providers that were willing to do the tests and take me seriously. So I'll start out first with my story. So really started around puberty. I was pretty much on time with all of my symptoms of puberty. Started developing breasts in late elementary school and into middle school. And both my mother and my grandmother started having their period at 12 years old, which is average. And my 12th birthday came and went. I turned 13, turned 14, turned 15, still no period. And at that point, I was showing all other signs of puberty. And at that point, my younger sister turned 12 and had her period. So, you know, something is wrong. And usually 15 years old is pretty much when doctors, pediatricians start to become concerned. So I was referred to an OBGYN, which for a 15-year-old, seeing an OBGYN is very intimidating and not usually done. Usually, you know, you start seeing an OBGYN probably between the ages of 18 and 21. So I had a pelvic exam done pretty early. I had numerous tests done, you know, labs, including looking at my thyroid and my estrogen and my testosterone and my FSH, LH. Just looked at everything, my prolactin, and nothing was found. Everything was within normal range. My ultrasound was fine, showed that, you know, I had all the parts that I need because, you know, there are diagnoses out there that a woman can be born without a uterus, for example. But everything was there. The pelvic exam showed, you know, it wasn't that I had an imperforate hymen or anything like that. So it was really a mystery. I don't know if at the time my parents didn't really push it or if they were just okay with the uncertainty, but my workup really stopped there. And somewhere around 16 or 17 years old, I was started on the pill. because I was told that from my OBGYN that it would help my iron if I was bleeding every month. And I was told that it would be good for my bones. So I started on the pill and started getting my period every month. So at this point, I guess it was proving that I had the ability to have a period. But that just means that, you know, I have a uterus and my uterus is able to shed its lining. That's really all that it means. And I guess that my uterus is able to respond to hormones and hormone withdrawal since I was having my period. So at that point, I was still really wondering, and I didn't, you know, I was young, I didn't understand too much, but I was thinking there must be something wrong with my anatomy that they're not picking up on. Maybe I have abnormal chromosomes. Maybe there's something wrong with my brain communicating with my reproductive organs. And all of it was a lot more scarier because nothing was being picked up on. And, you know, even though I just saw my pediatrician in an OBGYN, I thought that, you know, I would always be a mystery, basically. But I didn't think too much about it because I wasn't in a serious relationship at the time. I wasn't ready to have children at the time. So I sort of let it go. But it was always in the back of my mind that I had something that was just unexplained, that would always be unexplained, that would prevent me from having kids. And that always bothered me for a really long time. Because I wanted kids more than anything. Everything that I was working towards was so that I could provide a good life for my children. That's not what all women want, but that is certainly what I wanted ultimately. And I tried to stay optimistic, knowing that for quite a few different types of infertility, there were treatments available, like IVF, for example. And I didn't really know the extent of that, but I knew that there was just options out there in case I really did have a lot of struggle. But I also knew that, you know, depending on what it was, some things probably couldn't be treated very much, like if there was something wrong with my anatomy. So that was always in the back of my mind. So fast forward to college, still on birth control, I started dating my now husband as a senior in college, and I had to talk to him about my past and the uncertainty around having kids, but knowing that we both had that shared goal of wanting to have kids someday, I had to talk with him pretty early about, you know, that I never really had my period regularly, which means I probably wasn't ovulating, and there may be a possibility that I will never have a regular period or ovulate. I was still on birth control. There was a short time during college that I actually went off of birth control. I was not sexually active at the time, so that wasn't a problem. I don't really remember the specifics about why I chose to go off birth control, but I think it just had something to do with me not really finding the time, because I was going to college in Boston, where I was from and where my parents were and where my insurance was in Pennsylvania. So it was hard to find the time to go back to my OBGYN in Pennsylvania and to get a refill on my prescription, essentially. So I forget the specifics, but I was off birth control for a time, and maybe because I wasn't really believing that it was going to help my iron or my bones, and the fact that I wasn't sexually active, I'm not sure, but I was off birth control for a little bit. And I actually did have a few periods off of the birth control, but they were always unexpected. So they were very irregular. I think I was probably skipping a month or two between periods. But I felt a lot better that I was able to have a few periods. When I started dating my now husband, I resumed birth control with, you know, plans to become sexually active, especially after we got engaged. And then we got married, started medical school, continued to take birth control. We weren't ready to have kids until I was really in my third year of medical school. And when I was in medical school, I kept an eye out during the curriculum for diagnoses that could be something that could apply to me. But I never learned about a diagnosis that really fit my picture. And I never saw myself in any textbook, any case, any test question or practice test question, even though there was a lot of material about infertility. Just me, I did not line up with any diagnosis. So I really just felt like a mystery. I definitely learned about hypo-hypo and PCOS, but it was taught as kind of a thing that hypo-hypo was for women that were underweight, exercised too much, and that certainly wasn't me. I had a BMI usually around 19 or 20, and with PCOS, I never had acne, never had hirsutism or hair growth. You know, my testosterone was always in normal range. And again, my BMI was 19 or 20. So it didn't fit the picture that we were taught of someone who was obese. So I really just carried this diagnosis of primary amenorrhea for a really long time. And then because I started having periods off of the pill, I guess I wasn't primary amenorrhea anymore, but just someone that had a really irregular periods, but I wasn't sure if they still were irregular because I was always on the pill. So I never knew what my normal cycles were like. So after about 3 years of marriage, we decided that it was time for us to try to have kids. And I was looking forward to finally coming to some sort of conclusion about if I truly was infertile, you know, to start that process of grieving. I was even looking forward to that. Or I was looking forward to having the certainty that, yes, I can have kids. And I found out that it's a lot messier than that because there is a spectrum of infertility and fertility. And most diagnoses can predispose you to having difficulty, but there's very few diagnoses that are truly infertility. So I came off the pill once we were having that conversation and we knew that we were ready to start trying, and I saw a midwife. And after explaining my history, she diagnosed me right then and there with infertility. Because usually infertility, you need to be trying to become pregnant for a year. But that is only if you have regular periods. And I never had regular periods. At this time when I came off the pill, I actually had my withdrawal bleed, and then about a month later, I had a period. So I was ecstatic. This meant that something was happening. My body was responding, kind of like it did in the short time during college. But then my periods were very irregular. I was having them again every 2 or 3 months instead of every month, which means I probably wasn't ovulating. So because I was having those irregular periods still, I was diagnosed with infertility, which was secondary to something. My midwife made it seem like, you know, there had to be something going on. We just have to figure out what it was. And that made me feel a little bit better because I was always this mystery beforehand. And this was a good 10 years later after my first workup at 15 years old. So my midwife started a workup, and I talked more about this in my other episodes, but it was basically a repeat of all the workup that was done when I was 15, 16, over a decade prior. But something that she did that wasn't done before was a progestin challenge and an ultrasound that was done in the follicular phase. And these two tests helped to confirm my diagnosis of polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS, because I was able to have a withdrawal bleed with the progestin challenge. And that ultrasound, because it was done in the follicular phase, it was able to show the polycystic ovaries. So there's something called the Rotterdam criteria I'll talk more about, but you need 2 out of 3 of the criteria. I had 2 because of the polycystic ovaries and the inovulation or irregular periods that show sign of inovulation. The other criteria is something that I never had, which was androgen excess or signs of androgen excess. So the high testosterone, the acne, the hirsutism that I never had. And I was considered to have a typical PCOS because I didn't have that criteria. Many women have all three criteria, especially the women that are talked about during medical school cases and test questions. They almost always have all three criteria to make it an easier question, but many women only have two out of the three. So I, especially since I always had a normal BMI, I was not suspected to have something like this. And I talked a little bit about this during my series on my fertility journey. My midwife said that I had to see a reproductive endocrinologist. And I had to wait many, many months for that appointment. I asked for one more round of Clomid and I was able to get pregnant. If you want to hear more about that story, I have several episodes talking more in details, step by step, as I'm going through it. So this episode I'm recording on the complete other side of this because I now have a 7-month-old daughter. So I was able to get pregnant and had a beautiful, joyful pregnancy and postpartum journey. And now I hope to share about PCOS. So let's talk about this. So PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, is common. A lot of women will have those irregular menstrual cycles, that polycystic ovaries on ultrasound, and then they will have some of the clinical features like acne, hirsutism, obesity. It's estimated to affect between 5 and 10% of women, so that's almost 1 in 10 women will be affected by this. And it's important to get diagnosed even if you don't want to have children, because it's going to increase your risk of obesity, fatty liver, sleep apnea, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. So even someone like me with a normal BMI, I am still being monitored for all of these things because PCOS predisposes me. So I went to see my primary care physician about a month ago, and she included a lot of metabolic testing in my lab work because we have to be monitoring for these types of things. And usually the symptoms of PCOS will start around the age of puberty, like it did in my story. And it's normal to have irregular periods as a young woman because the connection between your brain and your reproductive organs has to mature. So many women will have irregular periods when they first start puberty. And you know that many women will also have acne when they are in puberty. So those two things, that doesn't mean that all of those women have PCOS, because those can be attributed to other things. Those are kind of expected for someone of that age. So that's probably why the diagnosis is often delayed, unless you have suspicion for it. So if you have not just acne, but also hirsutism, then you can dig a little bit deeper. And most women with PCOS will have what I had in my college years, which is periods that only occur a few times a year, not the expected 12 times a year once a month. Less often, women might not have a period at all, which was me when I started puberty. I just had amenorrhea. It's also complicated by polycystic ovaries can actually occur in other diagnoses. Like, you can actually have it with hypo-hypo, or with women that have regular cycles. So that's why you need two out of the three criteria, because the polycystic ovaries by themselves do not necessarily mean PCOS. And also, some women with PCOS won't have polycystic ovaries. And it's estimated that up to 85% of women with PCOS are overweight or obese. But, you know, that means that more than 15% are not. I really am not a fan of PCOS being linked with obesity. Yes, it does increase your risk of it, but not all women have that obesity. PCOS is also associated with depression, anxiety, and eating disorders, especially binge eating. It's important to know that, you know, metabolism and mental health, everything is so interconnected. So, like I said, if you have really any of the symptoms of PCOS, it's worth talking to a doctor about it so that they can do additional testing and either rule out PCOS or increase suspicion for PCOS and maybe rule out other things and then arrive at the diagnosis of PCOS. There was a study done that showed that half of women with PCOS had to see three or more health professionals prior to being diagnosed. So that certainly applied to me. I was at three as well. And it was probably more than three because I saw doctors in the meantime, not strictly about my irregular periods, but they also, you know, didn't ask the questions. You know, they didn't ask me about my periods. And so therefore, they weren't able to dig deeper into that. Like, I had a PCP during college who never asked me about my periods. So that's all for now. I do want to talk more about PCOS and especially get into talking about the treatment for PCOS. Go into more details about how I am treating my PCOS. But I like to keep these episodes short, so I will include another full-length episode on this topic. View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to First Line's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to First Line on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.